our team is devoted to creating the user experience for Windows and thinking about user experience for the basically applications that live on the Windows platform. So we're a set of usability folks, user researchers, ethnographers, so people who try to understand what users are doing. We're a set of designers, graphic designers, interaction designers, and we're also a set of technical writers and people who are experts in language and writing text. And the three of us, the three disciplines, work together to help the Windows team create experiences that people can use, that have relevance and utility to them in their daily life, both either consumers or knowledge workers, and also that they love. So,
tell me the truth. Do the developers really listen to anything you guys say?
Yeah, absolutely.
They do. Huh?
They sure do. Yeah. And it's funny. It's depending on what team you're on. This kind of stuff is clamored for. Like, people come asking for, hey, we're building this and we don't know what to build, or here's a design that we're going to build. Help us think about it. Help us do it better. And so we get a lot of requests that we have to turn down because there's only so many of us. It's the reason why people listen partially is that it's been part of our development, formally part of our development cycle for 10 years now. Every employee that comes to a product team at Microsoft has to take a course called the product cycle model, and usability and user experience design is formally part of that development model. So everybody comes in going, oh, that's part of the process. Yeah. Our team should do it.
Where are we right now?
So right now we're in one of the about 40 usability labs that are around Microsoft campus.
Right.
This is a, I don't have the light on in the other side. Maybe I can turn it on here. You won't see too much, but it's actually a mirror or a window, and we bring participants in and they sit on that side. We call this side the observer side.
Yeah.
So there's PCs over there and several cameras, and we sit on this side. This is actually you're looking at the screen of the PC that's on the other side of this wall.
Right.
So, this is one of the labs where we bring people in. We ask them to use our software.
So it's soundproof. They can't hear.
Can't hear us. There's a microphone that we do talk back and forth with them.
Right.
And we have digital tape recorders here.
Yeah.
And devices that help us, and software actually that helps us record the session and also comment on top of the session with time stamping. So every action that they do, everything that they say, we can make comments about it, mark that in certain ways, and go back and analyze how did they use it, where did they have
a
problem.
Can engineers back in their offices watch these sessions live?
Yeah, at least 5 years ago we started looking at streaming these sessions, and so now anybody around campus and even remotely from not just on main campus, but anybody can watch a usability session at Microsoft. And it's just a matter of telling our central guys, hey, turn this one on for streaming, and you can sit at your desk and watch the feature that you work on getting destroyed by a user.
Right. What, do you have any stories of things that you've learned in these labs? Or that the teams have learned, that you remember their significant things, that maybe did products get killed or changed radically from feedback that?
Yeah, so there are times when some great idea feature is going down the path to be built, and we start getting data back that says either this feature is a bad idea or the implementation of it is not quite right. The user research stuff that we do is not just in these labs. So we do a lot of work out in the field. We do field visits. We do focus groups. We spend time doing surveys and that type of stuff, interviewing users. So you know, the lab side of it is just a portion of it. Between the various methods that we employ to understand what people are doing on their PCs and with software and with technology in general, between all those different methods, we sort of get this triangulation effect. So the lab will tell us one thing, but the lab doesn't tell us, you know, we can't bring in 100,000 people to test this feature. So if we start seeing an issue, the lab doesn't tell us, is this a broad problem? Is, you know, what's the scope or the scale of this issue? And so with that, then we go out and we do instrumented versions where we can look at a lot of users at once, and their data comes back to us, and we're trying to understand, you know, on the broad scale, do people do these things? Do they have trouble with this type of thing? We also do the field research and ethnographic research where we try to understand the context of how they're using software. So it's not just us telling them do this task in our lab unnaturally. We go out and we, you know, shadow them. We spend days with them, you know, from morning until they go to bed at night, in some cases, looking at what they're doing, both with our software and our technologies and without it, just with, you know, regular, like, pen and paper and things like that. How do they accomplish the things that they want to do or need to do in their lives?
Right.
So good example of, yeah. Just to answer your question, of one of the things that we learned that was not surprising after we learned it, but this is not on Windows particularly. This particular example is from, we were building MSN Explorer, which is an integrated browsing client for MSN, and it includes a mailing component, email component, you know, inbox type stuff, a web browser, a media player, and an instant messenger component. And that whole design was meant to sort of simplify the world for people who are doing internet-related activities, particularly for consumer users. And we had decided to go with this basically a one-window model for the user experience. And that's great in many ways, but a lot of times people want to have multiple browser windows open, for example, so they want to compare one web page to the other, or they just want to go off and do some other task, you know, search for this thing and retain what they were doing previously. The design that we had initially was that if users wanted to open a new window, the way they would do that would be file and new window, and, you know, there it is. What we didn't realize until we started doing field work with the, even lab studies didn't show this, but when we started doing field work with that product, we realized that there was a problem with the way people would open up new windows. The model that we had at the time was, if you minimized your MSN Explorer and you wanted, or just got it out of the way, and you went back to the desktop and double-clicked, or from the start menu, opened up another instance of MSN Explorer, mm-hmm. instead of opening a new window, it would just open or refocus on the window that you had open. So it always brought you back to the single window. And people are not used to that, we found. People are, when they think about, I need another window of MSN Explorer, and particularly if I need another IE window, I'll double-click the IE icon and I get a new instance of the app.
Yeah.
And that was completely broken. We never realized that. People would go there and they'd click on it, it would just keep bringing up the same window.
Yeah.
And they were frustrated with that experience. So from doing the field research in that case, we said, hey, our windowing model, our new instance model doesn't work. People don't really think that much. It's a special type of user that goes file, new window.
Yeah.
You know, some people do it, but a lot of people don't.
I don't.
Yeah, yeah. I don't. but we wouldn't have realized that unless we did the field.
By shift clicking on links, which opens up the link in a new window.
Yep. So and actually that would have worked,
yeah.
But going to the icon, which was a pretty regular activity behavior for people, just simply caused frustration in this case. So we changed that model.